Say a typical day when you're doing a strip, a typical comic day.
Okay, a typical comic day would be quite disciplined with how my working day is structured. So I try and start by about 8:30, 9:00.
Okay.
And then work till about 4:00 maybe.
Yes.
And I sort of break up my working practice on comics. I sort of average about 10 pages a month.
Yes.
And then sort of the first half of that month is spent drawing them out. So I draw about two pages a day out. That's sort of fully inked and everything. And then the second half of the month is when I paint them. So I paint about a page a day.
Yes.
And paint over those inked pages. So
I mean, how do you work? Loose pencils, I mean, how does it work? Do you do loose structure drawings for pages? I mean, do you go almost straight to inks? I mean, how does a page come together?
When I get a strip from, a script from Pat, in this case, I sort of break it down on little thumbnails in a sketchbook and then just roughly, very roughly sort of break the story down, and then I do a more fuller colour, watercolour rough.
Yes.
About A4 size, and then from that I take photo reference stuff for it, and then draw out the page and go straight from that to ink. And they're quite sort of detailed inks.
Yes.
Which is probably not always necessary because I paint over them, but it does enable you to sort of paint as much or as little as you want, really. So it's quite useful that way, really.
I mean, have you ever thought about doing that kind of, I mean, maybe it's not your style, but kind of straighter line art, you know, rather than traditional colouring rather than painted colour?
I have done some in the past, and I think it's been a bit unsatisfactory all around. I just don't think I mean, I look at people who consider really good at inking and, Bolland and...
Yes.
And particularly when I was doing the Slane, looking at McMahon stuff, and it's just amazing. I just don't...
Is it the rendering? Is it just a tight rendering?
I think it's the absolute... Yeah, it's the complete confidence of putting a big slab of black somewhere or a big slab of white. And I just don't sort of have that... I sort of see things in colour and paint more than I do in black and white. So I've got infinite admiration for people who can do that well.
So, I mean, moving from the comics, for example, if you have a piece to do, you know, like a portrait or, you know, how does that... I mean, obviously that's a much longer process.
Yeah.
But I mean, for example, do you set yourself up and say, you know, Wednesday's going to be a Slane day and Thursday, Friday, Saturday will be days when I work on, a piece of art?
I try and do that. I mean, it takes about... It's 50-50 the balance between the comics and painting. I mean, it has been very comic heavy recently with the Slane.
But obviously, the painting takes a lot longer, doesn't it?
Yeah,
obviously.
Yeah. I mean, and that's just it takes longer because obviously oil paint takes longer to dry between sessions, and also there's a degree of gravity in a painting that there isn't in comics, and that's quite rightly so. Comics are supposed to be
immediate.
Yeah, exactly. So there's a level of sort of thought and process that's more time consuming than painting. But I try and separate if I can, sort of like Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday I'll be comics, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday painting.
Okay.
Doesn't always work.
No. So I mean, in terms of what you use, I mean, for the comic stuff, you know, for your roughs, I mean, what do you use? Just an ink pen? I mean, how do you...
I'll show you, because it's probably easy. I know we're on tape, but it'll probably be easier...
Well, you can show me and tell...
To describe. Tell us. Okay. So these are my sort of roughs. So I've got books of the whole roughs of all the Slane pages.
Oh, okay.
So I do them in sort of really rough sort of pencil, and then... Just colour them with...
Is that like brush pen, basically? You colour
this is sort of, literally, sort of really heavy pencil roughs, and then these are photocopied.
Oh, I see, and then you colour them.
Then I colour the photocopy.
Oh, wow.
So it's really...
So it's like three or four stages of the process, basically. It's quite in depth.
It is.
It's quite lengthy, I would have thought.
It is, and, it is probably over the top, but say... Particularly, this is the first time I've really done colour roughs before starting a project.
Yes.
And it really helps because it just gives me an idea of what the palette will be for each page.
So that by the time you get to paint the thing, you've already got the composition of the panel
exactly,
on the page.
Exactly, yeah.
And you know what's going to be in there, and you know what the camera angle is, and,
yeah.
and the structure, and the storytelling.
Yeah, and it's surprisingly helpful.
Wow.
So I think I'll probably do that from now on. But I think it was just because of I was so intimidated by the whole thing of Slane and the fact that it was sort of Bisley and McMahon and Fabry that really got me into 2000, that I really wanted to do a good job of it.
So, yes.
Or try and do a good job of
yes.
it. I'm not saying I have done a good job of it, but just try and, you know, and this was just, this was probably a process just driven by nerves and all that.
Yes, okay.
But it seemed to work out quite well in the end.
I mean, now you've done, so you said you just finished book two.
Yeah.
Do you feel a bit more confident and more comfortable now that you've actually done it for a little while?
I think so,
you feel like
yeah.
you bring your own feel? Because, I mean, it's, you know, visually it's very different. I mean, you know, when we first talked about it, it was 2013, it was an interesting proposition. I have to say that, you know, it looked wonderful and it does, it seems to be, it's still in keeping, you know, with the canon, if you like, of Slane.
Yeah,
while
yeah.
still bringing your own take on the character and the world.
Yeah, I wanted it to be more sort of rooted in nature.
Yes.
So there's lots of green and there's lots of,
yes.
you know, landscape. I think, you know, sort of, Clint Langley before me brought sort of quite a gothic sort of sensibility to the whole thing.
Yes.
And, you know, and that was a really good
fit for
direction.
Him. Yes.
Fit for him.
Yes.
But, you know, for me personally, I just, you know, as with the background and painting and stuff, I just, you know, I wanted to sort of try and root it a bit more in the earth.
So would it be a fair comment to say that, I guess, some kind of Pre-Raphaelite stuff? Would you say you brought a little bit of that to
bear? Yeah, maybe.
Or at least some of the British school.
I think
school,
it was more the paintings that really influenced me. And to be honest with you, they don't really sort of it doesn't really show in this picture. But I really like sort of around the turn of or the early part of the 20th century, late 19th century. There's a group of artists, and they were sort of did a lot of paintings to do with workers in the field and stuff.
Who in particular?
George Clausen and Stan Hopeful.
I've seen some of these, yes.
And it's, you know, and
so it's about the rural meets urban, basically.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
it's sort of like bringing those two.
Yeah, and I just read a really fantastic book by Rob Young called Electric Eden before I started it, which is all to do about folk music and music and how it's tied up with this kind of sort of almost occultism that is prevalent in the English sensibility, really.
And so it's almost like harking back to the past in a way. Well, trying to hang on to the past, trying to preserve elements of our historical and cultural past.
Yeah, yeah. And I was sort of watching films like A Field in England and what else did I watch? Something, you know, that's sort of
slightly it's the essence of England,
queasy,
yes.
Sort of feel to things, and that's what I sort of wanted to get, really. Rather.
Oh, okay. That's interesting.
Yeah, it's a good book, that Electric Eden.
Is it? Oh, okay. I might have to check that out.
Yeah, really. It's very, and that sort of, you know, like saying about the Pre-Raphaelites, that all can be traced back to, say, William Morris.
Of course.
And his sort of deliberate sort of going against the grain of the Industrial Revolution and trying to make things sort of beautiful and handmade,
yes.
then coming into contact with the fact that's fine, but only rich people can buy it.
Yes.
But I mean, that's by the by. But then that was my thinking.
Yes, that's interesting.
That was my thinking about trying to sort of root it back in to the earth a bit more.
And, yes.
Because, you know, it's always... you know, Pat sort of...
Well, the thing is, there's a lot of that in there, isn't there?
Yeah,
it's about mythology and it's about getting back to your roots.
Yeah,
upon, you know, it's...
Yeah, and that's what I love that about Slane. And I sort of really got the feeling with that, with McMahon stuff, that's
yes.
what he was... I mean, even the very fact that his pages looked like they were sort of carved in stone.
Well, no, exactly, yes.
It's fantastic. Technique. I don't know whether he did that technique intentionally, but
it obviously works. Yeah. Yes.
Really great.
So. Yeah. But I mean, you've still got your feet in sort of two camps, if you like. Obviously, you're doing the comic art, and obviously, you've got the portrait and the fine art. So I was just wondering, I mean, do you enjoy the variety of both? Because obviously, two very different disciplines.
Mm.
I mean, is it something that you still
yeah,
enjoy?
Yeah, no, I love both disciplines, and I think there was a period where I thought, you know, I'd probably like to just be a painter, as in a portrait painter.
Yes.
And, but then, you know, I do love comics, and there's a reason why I've been doing it for 20 years.
It's
just because I just love it. And, you know, I love the people who evolved in that world and everything. And so it's been good to keep both sort of plates spinning. And I think there's a degree of cross-pollination.
Yes.
And there's certainly a lot of portraiture in the select, you know, sort of precise figure painting or portraiture in those. So,
yes.
And then compositionally, a panel that transfers over to the painting.
Yes.
So.
I mean, does any snobbery exist between the world of fine art and the world of comics?
Well, to be honest with you, I was kind of, I was sort of, I think this was more me than anything else, but I was kind of sort of slightly embarrassed. I sort of remember this Royal Portrait Society, or vice president of this society. And I didn't really sort of tell anybody about, I had this sort of separate life. And I've been absolutely fascinated by it.
Really?
Which has been quite...
Oh, okay.
Because I don't think portrait painting specifically, it hasn't got quite the academic sort of fustiness it used to have. I mean, most of my peers in that society, they're not sort of trained in fine art or whatever. They've come from a background in
illustration. So it has become more open and more accessible.
Yeah, definitely. And certainly, you know, say, for instance, with, you know, Phil has a background in comics and comic illustration, and then he's, you know, moved into that.
I think he said he wanted to deliberately divorce himself from that because he was concerned that he wouldn't be taken seriously if they thought he was just a comic guy.
Yeah, probably probably right. I think the only problem I do find with my painting that is a hangover from the comics is because the comics you have a specific thing, you've got to tell a story and you've got to be precise, and then I have that illustration sort of tightness.
Yes.
Sometimes intrusion to the painting, which is a bit of a pain.
Yes.
You know, I've got to make that mouth right.
Yes.
And that's not entirely necessary.
No. But I guess it's interesting. Obviously, in the old days, portraits were commissioned by, you know, grand families to hang in their, in their lounge or in their drawing room. But I mean, what is the purpose, I guess, is the question I'm asking, of portrait painting now? I mean, obviously it's representational, but what do you think is... Because obviously you have things like the Sky Portrait Artist of the Year, so it's become a little bit more, I guess, populist rather than popular.
Yeah.
I mean, what is people's attitude to portrait painting now in 2015?
I think it's to be quite a peculiar sort of little cul-de-sac of painting, that it seems to be sort of quite bulletproof with people's popularity. And for instance, say, like the RP show is very popular with people coming to see the BP's, one of the biggest
shows
of the year.
Seems to be very well received,
And, you know, I don't know, I think it must be a fundamental fascination with people seeing themselves or other, you know, other people. I mean, there is this slightly irritating sort of side thing of, you know, painting famous people, which is an irrelevance, really, to me.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, that's the sort of thing that people always ask you, is if you painted anybody famous, as though that's got anything to do...
Is this
going to
validate your work as an artist?
Yeah, it's got anything to do with painting at all.
No.
But apart from that, I don't know, I just think it's a, you know, it's a fundamental fascination with ourselves, I think.
Yes.
And that's, you know, mirrored in, you know, reality TV, everything.
I suppose.
We just... fascinated with ourselves as a species, I think.
Yeah, but it seems like it's had a bit of a renaissance in the last 5 or 10 years, because there was a period with all the conceptual stuff that it seemed to fall out of favour with people, and then it seemed, and obviously you still had the portrait gallery, obviously, which has been there for, you know, 150 years, but it just seems that it seems to be coming back into
I suppose so. I mean, I've had no... You know, it's funny that sort of... the perception or the attitude of art is either one thing or another, rather than it can,
I know, it's not necessarily the
case.
It can
just be this fantastic work. Yes. And I suppose sort of like in the sort of mid-90s or whatever, and there was a certain section of the art world was at the fore, and to a certain extent it's still the same way now.
Yes.
But you know, and a lot of other painters or makers or craftsmen, they just trundled on regardless.
Yes.
And
yes.
Try to sort of to make a living. And but you know, that's this sort of that sort of world of art is so small,
I suppose.
In sort of its, I mean, things like probably the Tate Modern stuff has promoted it, and you know, there's some amazing work done, but it's such a small sort of section of it by the makers and the buyers.
Yes.
I mean, you know, and it's irrelevant to me, really, that world.
Yeah, no, but, fair enough.
You know, it's like sort of if you were a serious theatre actor and then you've constantly been told, yeah, but so-and-so who's in EastEnders...
has done rather well.
Yeah, and you just think, well, what's that got to do
with me? No, fair enough.
And, but, you know, that's fine, you know. I say, good luck to anybody who's making money of art. But, I don't know what it is with... I suppose with painting, I think there's... I don't know, I think that there's still a... I suppose there's a impressiveness about... Or people are impressed or like to see, good skills and craftsmanship.
Yes.
And it's still pretty impressive.
Yeah.
But I don't know, that's not particularly anything to do with the actual painting.
No.
Things, but you know, ask to explain why it's still popular, I suppose that might be something to do with it.
Yes.
But I don't know.
So, I mean, who do you look at these days? Obviously you go back to, you know, the older painters, but you obviously still look at, you know, more modern painters as well. I mean, who...
Yeah, I mean, I think it's probably sort of the usual people. I mean, I'm lucky in this society that some of the painters who are also members, like Brendan Kelly and Andrew James and Saeed Dai, who's an artist here from Bath. They're amazing painters, really brilliant.
Yes.
And then you've got Phil and
of course,
Justin Mortimer is very...
Yes.
You know, I think those people are fascinating to me because they really are exponents of the fact that, you know, being able to paint brilliantly, which they absolutely can do, is sort of, that's only part of the thing. It's not how you paint, it's why
you paint and how you approach.
Yeah, and you know, you could just paint the same thing for the rest of your life and make a very nice career out of it, but it's just constantly making life difficult for yourself.
Yes.
It's a very impressive thing and very counterintuitive to what it is to survive.
Yes.
You know, it's almost like sort of willful sabotage
of your
career, which is very, to me, is very impressive.
Yes.
So,
yeah. But I mean, Phil, well, he strikes me as, I don't know, he seems like a little bit of an outsider. I mean that in a good way, obviously, because he's American, but he's lived over here for a long time. Do you think, I mean, obviously, it's an old idea, the idea of the artist or writer as like an outsider, basically, you know, depicting something that they're sort of not part of, if you like. I mean, how important do you think that is for an artist or a creative person, because you could say that about a writer as well. Do you think that does bring something different to their portrayal of the work that they choose to produce?
I suppose so. I mean, it's... I suppose so. I mean,
obviously, you had Whistler, who obviously was an American who came to live in London and Paris, and so he was portraying a society he wasn't really... Well, he was part of, but he'd come from...
Yeah,
and obviously had people like Henry James
and
Joseph Conrad. So these were people who came, who weren't part... They became part of the society, but they weren't born into it. You know, and so they were able to offer a slightly different perspective. And obviously, Phil is an American who's lived here for a long time, but he's able to offer perhaps a slightly different perspective.
Yeah, I mean, I've never really spoken to Phil about that at all, really. But perhaps just even on a really fun, superficial level, the fact that this country does have a really good history, as you know, the US does as well, of a painted culture, really.
True.
And it's, you know, on the one hand, it's you know, it can be quite a burden. But it also means that we are as a nation, instilled with this history of...
interest and love of the painted form.
Yeah, and that perhaps help. Mm. I mean, it is quite an interesting thing culturally, because, I mean, I have no idea what sort of life is like if you're a painter in Italy or...
Well, these days, it must be quite tricky, because obviously they've got they've got history, but I can't think of any contemporary Italian painters.
No, I mean, there's a few sort of Italian schools of painting.
Yes.
Or that teach them now. And,
yes.
You know, everybody comes out looking, painting exactly the same, which is...
I guess.
Which is, but, I mean, there's still that sort of rigorous classical training, which I suppose is, you know,
But what do they do with it, I guess?
Yeah, well, yeah,
After they've trained, because there doesn't seem to, well, maybe they go to the US or here, perhaps.
Yeah, I mean, I think sometimes, I suppose, with any... I mean,
I don't know.
No, I don't know, because I didn't come from that sort of background at all. I think the most important thing is, if you're a painter, is just to be completely aware of what's going on, really, and not be the centre of your universe.
I mean, did university... Was it something you were interested in prior to, you know, training in terms of art?
What, the paint?
The paint, you know, the...
Oh, my dad's a landscape painter, and really, you know, really good landscape painter. And, but, you know, incredibly different to sensibilities and actual physical what we do.
Yes.
So I've always been sort of aware of painting. So I suppose there's a degree of exposure to it.
Yes.
But I sort of started with in graphic design and then moved to illustration, and then it was the comics was my first sort of love of what I wanted to do. And
was it that one thing led to another? Was it you interested in one thing and you thought, oh, I'd like to find out more about this particular subject, and then suddenly you're exposed to a massive world with all this stuff, and you thought, wow, this is incredible.
And I think it's all based on a lot to do with the fact that the artists I absolutely loved before I started comics, like Kent Williams and John Morton.
Because he had a painterly approach to their work. And because they were influenced by people like Sheila and Klimt. And I guess you probably thought, you know, let's check these other people out because you can see a path from them to Williams and Muth's work.
Absolutely. And sort of particular, I think John Muth, he's moved into children's book illustrations.
Yes.
More, which
they're lovely. I'm in my really head. They're really nice. Yeah. I've seen my brother's got some of those.
And then Kent Williams has completely gone into fine art. I think the last thing he did was The Fountain, which was...
I know, it's kind of a shame that... you can understand why they do it, but you're sad at the same time that you don't get to see these people. It's like George Pratt, you very rarely see... Yeah. Part of the last comic thing he did, I mean, he did the Wolverine thing, he did that Batman thing. They were really nice, they were gorgeous, but I think they never collected the Wolverine thing, I don't think.
No.
Which is a tragedy to me.
It is.
Because his stuff is so beautiful.
Yeah, I mean, his book, Enemy Ace, when...
And the Bluesman thing, and the World War One stuff he does is still spectacular. I mean, for our studio book, I got to see him when he lived in North Carolina. I stayed with Tommy Lee Edwards, and I got to go to see George when he lived there. And I got to visit his house, and he had a wonderful studio. And he's just his stuff is magnificent.
It is
spectacular.
But from an artist's point of view, you can really see why people like Kent Williams and George Pratt move into more, because there's just that.
It makes sense.
Just more gravity and time and sort of weight to your work.
Yes.
But comics, you just can't get in comics. And
no.
That, you know, that's fine.
I mean, I guess it's the nature of the beast. I mean, there was one point when it seemed like things were moving a little bit towards, but they seem to have moved away from that sort of thing. There was a period, I guess, starting with things like Epic Illustrated, and moving into when Archie Goodwin was editor-in-chief at Epic, and then the early days of Vertigo. But now it doesn't seem like that sensibility really fits. I mean, you couldn't imagine you couldn't imagine the Enemy Ace graphic novel painted by someone like George Pratt. It's a shame, but it wouldn't happen.
I remember sort of picking out for the first time,
it was gorgeous.
And then sort of when I started, it was the stuff like Havok and Wolverine and yes. Blood and
I
stuff.
Remember.
And Havok and Wolverine. Like two artists, Kent Williams and John,
it was amazing
working on
together.
The same pages.
And it was so bold visually, it was so unlike anything else you'd seen before. And things like the Dracula graphic novel, you know, the John Luth, that was stunning. And it was all this stuff, but it just doesn't seem... It's kind of a shame. It's like a sensibility that's fallen out of favour again. And I can't think of any editors who would commission a painter to do which is a shame.
It is a shame. I mean, and that's another, you know, that's the sort of thing that you sort of quite, sort of slightly get disillusioned with the world of comics. And you sort of go occasionally into comic shops. And I literally, I sort of stepped out of it for a few years. And I just don't know where to start.
I know.
You know, and you just see walls of
they look
stuff,
quite similar.
And they all look the same colour palette, everything.
Same style.
You know, I used to remember, I sound like an old fart, but I used to remember you going there and you see a fully painted cover, you go,
well, that's nice, I'll check that out. Exactly, yes. You just
I think the only artist is Mike Mignola. It's just that really
I saw the artist edition of The Hellboy in Hell, and that was fabulous, because they ran the story unlettered, and it was just the black and whites, and it looks... Yeah. He looks staggering.
No, he's absolutely...
His stuff is still beautiful and compositionally, and it's just so elegant. And it's simple but complex at the same time. Yeah. He manages to incorporate all these different elements. He does it seemingly so effortlessly. I know he struggles with it all
the
time.
Yeah, I mean, that's the nice thing of sort of following him on Facebook and stuff, and he's always saying, oh God, what
I hate
the whole
this.
Day.
No, he's like, they wasted the cover, and I'm sure he probably has.
And... Yeah, I just think he's absolutely just peerless in the world of comics.
Yes.
He's just absolutely brilliant.
No, I agree. I mean, compositionally. I'm trying to think of other people I like. I mean, I like some of J.H. Williams' stuff.
Yeah,
I have to be honest. Well, I might not leave this in, but I'm not a huge fan of, the writing of the Sandman stuff. I think that he's a great artist, but I feel like he's a little bit wasted.
Yeah.
And stuff like that. I'm trying to think. I mean, there are some good people. I'm trying to think of people I like. I mean, I still like, and I guess this goes back to when I was a kid, I still like seeing Simonson stuff, like Ragnarok, which is stunning.
Yeah.
And he's an artist who seems to have, he hasn't sat still. He's still constantly evolving and trying to strive to be better. And his stuff is still incredibly dynamic.
Yeah.
And just very...
I like it. I like Eric Powell's Goons.
I've not read much of that.
I mean, that's really, it's really,
and it's quite
fun and great. And I think, you know, most of the comics I buy now is just sort of from Europe. Because they just seem to have that, you know, talking about the full colour paint stuff.
Yes.
That's in such
they
a common thing.
They still have that. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, it's probably more common than. Than not really.
No, I'm sure.
And it's just incredibly refreshing. It's, it's treated as a piece of art or work.
Yes.
Whereas comics are just like they just
throw
seem
away.
To be
just like
out
each month, and then they're thrown away.
Like a flyer for the films.
Yes.
Or something.
Well, no, exactly.
Which is a shame, really, because I mean, there's some brilliant people working.
Yeah, there are definitely.
And it just sort of gets, you know, it's just. I still find it unbelievable that, you know, still sort of 50, I suppose, I don't know when Batman was created.
It's 1930, well, it's 75 years, I think.
I mean, it just seems absolutely staggering that this character is still...
It's still out there, still being pumped out.
Jesus,
I know.
And you think, God, you know, that's like sort of still somebody writing Sherlock Holmes books.
Well, no, they still do occasionally.
Yeah,
not the same, on a monthly basis. No, exactly.
You know, and reinventing them, and this is the new joke, and you think, oh,
for God's sake. I know, it's just, why not come up with some new ideas?
You know, I've spent days probably watching different incarnations of Batman. It's thinking, enough.
I know.
It's just the same thing.
Pretty much, yeah.
But, you know, that's probably being an old fart again. That's fine, but I just find it really odd that nobody... That's why sort of that wave of Sin City and Hellboy what were the other sort of legends?
Next Men was the John Byrne
that's
one.
Right,
and then there was also... there was that Monster Men, the thing done by Gary Gianni, which
that's
is really
that
nice.
That was like a... That was with Hellboy, wasn't it?
I think they had it as a backup. So
I mean, that was a
stuff.
Really nice sort of concerted effort.
It was actually something a bit different, but it just sort of petered out. Only Hellboy really seemed to carry on.
Yeah, I suppose Hellboy and Sin City were the only ones that had any sort of
legs, I suppose,
longevity,
which is a shame.
And I think Sin City just ended up being a bit
bit of a pastiche of itself.
Yeah, a bit ridiculous. After a while. I mean, the first couple of stories were brilliant.
They were great, but he ended up repeating himself. Yeah. Because he had very few stories to tell, yeah, and it just got quite repetitive.
Yeah, whereas Hellboys, you know, that's probably in the last, well, it's 20 years, isn't
yes.
it? But, you know, that's probably the only big sort of creation of any sort of...
Yeah, it's been very consistent. It has been a lot of fun, and he's got some really nice ideas.
It's an amazing thing. I mean, I hope he's really proud of it.
Well, I'm sure he is. I mean, it's an amazing achievement.
Yeah.